Welcome to the Data Democracy. Presented by renowned O'Reilly author Olsen Benyu. Empowered by Xenia. Make your data accessible and discoverable by anyone, anywhere, at any time.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to the Data Democracy, and I'm your host, Ole Olesen Benyu, Chief Evangelist in Xenia, and the author of the Enterprise Data Catalog, published by O'Reilly. In this podcast, we explore what an enterprise data democracy is with knowledgeable guests. Today's guest is Manuel Bernich. Manuel is a consultant on modern data practices and a data mesh pioneer based out of Vienna, Austria. He has a rich work experience setting up a consultancy and also from inside big industries. This episode is a little different from the majority in the sense that we discuss Manuel's work experience quite in depth. We also discuss product owner for search, which is something I believe every company should have. Takeaways. Okay, first, the data leader takeaway. When we are in the midst of daily operations fighting to keep up with demands, don't be afraid to try new things. Manuel did exactly that for Data Mesh. And second, a data democracy takeaway. Manuel also earlier persuaded his data science team to shift from R to Python, making it easier to scale software and work with data. And third, a personal takeaway. When Manuel read Jean-Marc's blog posts, he had to admit to himself that he did not understand them. He had to read them several times. And in tech, I think it would be useful if we could all be as honest as Manuel was in this episode. Okay, enough of me talking. Let's hear what Manuel has to say. Hi, Manuel.
Hi, Ole.
It's a pleasure to have you on, Manuel. We've been exchanging ideas for quite some time. For the listeners, can you share a little bit about your background, where you're based, and what you do?
Of course. And I think, first of all, thanks for inviting me to the podcast. I'm based in Vienna, and basically my background is in the software engineering industry. I started as a build manager back then, which nowadays would be called probably something DevOps engineer or stuff like that, taking care about CI/CD pipelines for Java projects 15 years ago. Yeah, I have maybe a little bit of my personal life. Three kids with my wife living in Vienna. And right now I'm having my own IT consultancy and software delivery company and trying new challenges, so to say.
Exciting. So, of course, as I mentioned to the listeners in the introduction, there are some elements that we will be discussing in terms of the topic we will discuss today. But there was also this funny angle that we wanted to cover, and I think many have had this experience, and it makes us focus a little bit more on your career today. So, So I want to ask you the question, where were you when you discovered Data Mesh?
Ah, that was really a funny time back then. So as mentioned, I basically started my career in software engineering, being build manager for Java projects on a project 15 years ago. And then it continued, obviously, taking on some developer roles, being lead developer, team lead, and then switched a little bit the career path from a management career to an expert career and took on some role as a solution architect. And after spending a couple of years there, I got the opportunity, it was I think back in 2019, to, back then it was called Single Point of Contact. One of my former employers asked me, hey Manuel, can you support our mathematicians? And mathematicians back then were basically the data scientists. So it was a really small department, but here in Austria, data science in 2019 was not a big deal. I think it just started really to catch up compared to the rest of the market worldwide. And Yeah, the first task for me was basically just help them to connect to some SQL databases and be able to query some stuff. Soon we realized, okay, what we are doing here is not really leading us to a successful collaboration with the data science department. So we are basically providing them with all the necessary access, and they are fetching the data on their own, exporting it to a central place. Initially, we even started with an FTP server where all the CSV files got uploaded to. So basically a lightweight version of a data lake, I would say. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I realized, okay, this is basically leading us to nowhere. We're just getting from one trouble into the next problem. I realized that basically data scientists would like to spend more time on their experiments, on their machine learning part. But what they're basically doing was trying to do all the things that a software engineer was doing. So deliver some piece of software that others could then consume like through an API in a productive environment. And then basically my journey started. I tried to figure out, okay, what are other teams doing who suffer the same issue? Like you got a bunch of data scientists. And now you want to get those people work effectively in an existing organization, right? And to be able to include their solutions into existing workflows. I think I know the first funny thing was that we initially started, or the data scientists started with R, so scripting with R, which is, I think, frankly speaking, quite nice if you are at a university or doing some research stuff. Probably R is not that bad. But as soon as you start scaling out software, you have to think about a proper programming language. And back then, of course, I realized, okay, the rest of the market and all the community is using Python. So dear data scientists, maybe it makes sense we switch to Python as well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was a little bit challenging discussion at the beginning, but they realized quite quickly that we should do it, and it was not a big deal. So after a couple of months, we got everybody on Python instead of R, and that's where actually the journey really started. Catching up, and I realized, okay, now we have data scientists implementing Python code and relying on some data on a central data storage, but we failed all the time when it comes down to versioning, quality assurance, etc.
Yeah,
whenever there was a change in the source, all the pipelines broke. All the time competing with the data warehouse team. Of course, there was also a data warehouse team back then. And
but were they actually able to compete with you? I mean, were they?
You mean the data warehouse team?
Yeah.
Yes, in terms of knowledge.
Because Okay.
They built a lot of over the years. They built a lot of business knowledge and domain knowledge.
Of course.
But in terms of technology and how you do things nowadays correctly, technically not. So soon we realized, okay, it was really like competing. Whenever we introduced some new service with the data science department, the data warehouse team was like, hey, but we already have this, and our numbers slightly differ, so there must be an issue in your solution. Sometimes, indeed, there was an issue in our solution. But sometimes we realized that the data warehouse team was simply doing things in a different context. And that's where all the funny things started, when we started talking about, okay, but when working with data, you always need some kind of domain context. You always have to think about, okay, what kind of domain are you trying to solve a problem for? It was 2019 when I realized, okay, we need something else. We cannot simply just extract data to a data lake and at the same time compete with a data warehouse team who do things differently, of course. Mm-hmm. There must be a combined solution on the market. I mean, we cannot be the only ones facing that big challenge. And then I stumbled upon this blog post on Martin Fowler's website from Jean-Marc, where she first described it was a series, right? She released the first version, then there was a next one, etc. When I read that for the first time, it was literally mind-blowing, because all the opinions I had about, you know, all this data lake and data science stuff and how people treat data nowadays were somehow bundled into that blog post. And I realized, okay, this is something huge, But I must admit, I had to read it, I think, 3 to 4 times. So first I read it, then I slept the night over it. And then on the next day, I thought, okay, I have to show this to my team. Then I showed it to the team and spread the news. And then I had to read it again and again. And I think after the third time reading it, I started realizing that it's really a big thing. It's not just a small technological change that you implement somewhere. It should be a huge organizational effort that you need to invest to be able to apply some data mesh principles.
What I really like about that moment in your work life is that I had exactly the same moment, right? I discovered that blog post and I was just like, this is a great idea. I'm not sure I get it, but it's a great idea. And then I read it again and again, and I remember showing it to my to the management team of the IT department. I was an enterprise architect at the time, and they were like, "Yeah, this is a beautiful drawing. This is nice artist work, but there's no substance in this." And then I kept on reading it, and I didn't understand everything either. But I just, there is something in this, right? And that was like, anyway, I think a lot of people had exactly that experience that you had there, Manuel.
Mm-hmm. I think so as well. It was also the way how Jean-Marc wrote it, and also, you know, step by step describing everything. It was really catchy. It really catched somehow my attention. And just as you said, the first time I really, it was a moment like, okay, now let that sink in because it's a cool thing, but I don't understand 100% of it yet. I mean, I don't understand how to apply it. It was like Starship being landing onto the moon, and you're now trying to figure out what to do with it.
Exactly. So what happened? What happened? You showed it to the team. How did they react?
Somewhere like, hey, this sounds cool, sounds beautiful. It's addressing a lot of issues that we have, but how should we solve this? And how do you think we can afford having separate data product owners for every single domain, and who should do that job? And at the beginning, it was a mix of, okay, it's nice, it's cool, but also a lot of fear. And of course, how should we do it? It's just a simple blog post. Do you know anybody who is doing it already? Do we have someone with experience? And what I can say, back in 2019, in the DACH region, so Germany, Austria, Switzerland, I think there were just a few people, probably a couple, me and I know some other guys who discovered that blog post and were seriously thinking about applying this, you know, into the German speaking world. It was really challenging when you explained to people, okay, look, guys, I think this is the way we should do it. We did it wrong before, and especially showing it to the data warehouse community was poo.
Yeah.
Really, really challenging.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't like that, I'm sure.
No.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, it's completely shifting the way of. On the data warehouse, you previously centralized all the knowledge in one department, or at least tried to.
At least tried to, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And this way, you obviously pay attention to decentralized knowledge hubs about the data, and you acknowledge that obviously there are people who are better informed about a certain domain than I am. So it makes sense giving them the head, you know, the lead. Okay, look, please take the head, take the lead. You are the better domain expert there. You can play the role as a data domain owner, or however it's called, a little bit better. And why not delivering data right from that domain to the consumers, to the whoever are the consumers, right?
And I gotta say, I mean, I think data warehouse teams all over the world were pretty mad at this idea of a data mesh.
Yes.
But I also think that many of those discussions missed the point. I mean, there's a classic, even somewhat disappointing, power play in an organization where people try to hold on to the power they have. That's a very natural instinct for people to do, but you also got to take into account that As I read Jean-Marc Dagani's post and the subsequent tsunami of data mesh content from more or less valid sources, right? I had a lot of things going on those years.
It was amazing.
I gotta say, it's if you see a rise in analytical data towards AI, towards machine learning, then as I also asked you in the beginning, right? You cannot have a data warehouse team sitting and supporting business intelligence use cases, claiming that their solution can be used and can scale to that level of consumption that other analytical use cases they have, right? I mean, as I see it, at least, I don't know about you, Manuel, maybe you can agree or disagree, but as I see it, this is like really the heart of why data warehouse teams are feeling challenged, but also somewhat naive, right? I mean, it's one thing to have enterprise-wide financial BI. You want to have that, no doubt. But it's just not, I mean, you cannot spin up any kind of machine learning use case using a data warehouse as your foundation. That would be so wrong.
Definitely. I mean, doing that, you could also use like an Excel spreadsheet or some Google Sheet mechanisms if you think that it's enough to have a data warehouse as a base for your machine learning projects or ML projects. Mm-hmm. But I definitely agree with you. I would probably add one thing here that I think the biggest challenge for classical data warehouse setups is to be able to cope with the necessity to react on change, to react on change on the market. Obviously, you are working in an enterprise or in a company, you're in a certain market, and then there are changes, of course, and then you have to be able to apply those market changes to your software products. What happens all the time is that the software engineering teams are implementing new features or changing existing features, and then it takes like half a year, literally, until the data warehouse team reflects those 10 changes to their data warehouse end to end. Sometimes it's quicker, sometimes it's taking longer, but on average, we are talking about months, up to half a year, maybe a year, depending on the priorities, which again is a big problem if you're talking about forecasting. I mean, even the term forecasting, look, our data warehouse team can give us some reports and we can forecast. No, they cannot. How can you tell that somebody can forecast who needs half a year to reflect changes from the market? I mean,
that's a pretty outdated forecasts once you get them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And the other thing is, I mean, nowadays people, you know, if you nowadays start like creating reports, just that someone looks through it once in a time and then you're fine and you have to create this manually. I mean, frankly speaking, a good ChatGPT integration can also create such a report, you know, fetch some data from somewhere, combine it in a report and send it over via mail to someone or present it in a nice dashboard. That's not really bringing you any value nowadays. And what people do not understand that in nowadays world, it's not enough to be able to present data so that some human beings can look at some nice diagrams and reports. But in nowadays world, you have to be able to produce data or data products that can get consumed also by machines, but are understandable and explainable to human beings because they want to understand, okay, if I feed a certain workflow, a machine, an AI, whatever, with a certain data, I want to understand what's the potential outcome or to see, okay, what are the results? And then to try to explain it to myself, okay, what's happening there? What's going on? What is the AI doing? Why is it deciding like it is? In the end, also, it comes down to how do companies or teams treat diagrams? I often hear the saying, oh, there's a nice report. We can answer a lot of questions with that. And I always tell them, no, reports and diagrams do not answer your questions. They help you to produce the right questions. So if you're looking at the graph or at the diagram, it should help you to produce even more questions, you know, to question your position on the market, etc. But it will definitely not help you to answer things. This is not what you need diagrams for.
No. Exactly. I think actually that is a very nice way to transition into to the topic that we were also intended to discuss in this talk, product owner search. So I noticed on LinkedIn you had this post about a product owner for search. I've been thinking about similar things myself for quite a while. Also had other guests on the podcast discussing this, David Scrubella.
Yes, actually, you mentioned that, and I sorry to interrupt you. I actually re-listened to that podcast, and then I realized that he has really a lot of similar thoughts on the search of data products.
Yeah, so you discovered that there were some similar thoughts there. Again, I mean, that is obviously not as big a thing as a data mesh discovery or idea. But it's a very important component to how you discover data in a company, and it's a new idea. So I would like to discuss and hear you out. What's a product owner for search for you?
Maybe let's start with what is it? What's probably not the case? You should not try to implement with, especially let's say a data catalog. A product owner for search is definitely not is someone who is operating a data catalog somewhere and providing a simple index, basically like a phone book. Hey, here are all our data products and data assets. You can search them by, they are sorted by alphabetical order. And of course, we have some labels and you can search through and browse it, et cetera, et cetera. Frankly speaking, also to tell a little bit from my experience from the past, when we started with, or when I first time on the first project started applying the data mesh principles, it was obvious to everybody, even the management, that we should start with one central piece, namely the data catalog. It went even that far that the CIO back then prioritized like the data catalog as the first thing we should have when trying to implement that new data platform. And so the journey went on. We went to the market and searched, okay, what kind of data cataloging solutions are there existing, because we don't have to implement our own. Of course, we found tools like LinkedIn's Data Hub, Amundsen, and some enterprise solutions that were quite expensive, I must say, but still we evaluated them as well and compared them. And after short comparison, we just picked the first one, which was back then LinkedIn's Data Hub. Basically, it had a really good fit into our architecture. We were doing a lot of with Kafka, and Data Hub was really a good fit there. But after we implemented the data catalog, and you know, had already the first data sets and data products in it, it was like, okay, now it's here. But we broadcasted the link to everybody. But are they using it? We don't really know. And that's why when I started thinking about, we released a product, but we have no clue who is using it. I mean, of course, you could look the log files and see who is requesting. We added some analytics on top and some monitoring to be able to catch, okay, who is internally even using the data catalog at what time and when. And then I realized people just click once on the link, look it up to see what's in there, and basically that's it. They will probably never return, or just return if they exactly know what they need. Like, okay, I know the name of a certain data asset. Just quickly open up the data catalog, look it up. Ah, okay, this and that. Check the description. But this doesn't happen that often. What happens more often is the challenge where people don't know what they need, and they don't know how to search for it. I mean, they don't know the name of it. They don't know how the data asset is named. They probably just know, okay, I need help in some area to fix something or to add some additional data points. I don't know. And then it's not enough to just have, you know, a search bar where you can type in some text and hope it will return you what you are searching for. Obviously, you need some better experience, something that is guiding the user towards, okay, what's possible, what's existing, what could potentially help you right now in your current situation. And to be able to do that, from my point of view, a really good search experience needs to be able to capture the current needs of somebody, a data scientist, a business analyst, whoever, to capture his current problems and needs to figure out, okay, now I understand what's his position, what is he trying to solve, and now I will present him possible, maybe already existing solutions or some data that could probably help him to solve it.
Yeah.
So that's when I realized, okay, simply having a data catalog is not enough. We need some landing page, some entry point that is first pre-processing the terms that you want to search for, and then let maybe some engine or some AI browse and search your internal company-wide knowledge and data, basically. So from my point of view, to come back to your initial question, what's a search product owner or product owner for search? It's definitely not a techie guy. It needs someone who understands the challenges and problems of people working in data science and AI, who understands, okay, if someone starts a new project, if someone starts a new data project, how is he finding information? What is he searching for? What are his thoughts? How can you even capture his current situation and ecosystem in his head to figure out, okay, what's the best way to present him with possible entry points? And from my point of view, and this is then really nice, I think a couple of weeks ago you also announced the new product of Zinia.
The Enterprise Data Marketplace?
Yes. Which pretty much then blow my mind again, because it's again a new word. You know, we went from search for data or a separate PO for search to a data marketplace, which pretty much is really a fit from my point of view to describe the whole topic. We are not just cataloging. It's not just a catalog. If you just have a catalog, that adds no value, actually. But if you're talking about the marketplace, obviously people start to understand, this is something more tangible. This is something where something is happening. You know, I have to provide some information. I have to give something to get something back.
Yeah.
And building it up, backed up through a knowledge graph is definitely the right direction, because I think there is no other way to be able to connect the dots and be able to provide a really good search experience to someone.
Obviously, this show is about our guest, but thank you a lot, Manuel. And I gotta say, in terms of the word enterprise data marketplace, it has been discussed in literature for some years actually. What I like about it is that it it points towards something else than a catalog. It points towards some kind of a transaction, right? There's a consumer, there's a provider. There's some as a demand, there's some supply, but all that has to come together in some solution, right? So it's a different thing than simply a catalog. And then of course you can be more or less skeptic towards new terms. I definitely am often a skeptic. I think the enterprise data marketplace will materialize something that we have been used to thinking about. For example, data warehouse. When the term data warehouse emerged, people, I'm sure 40 years ago now, right? But when that term emerged, I think there were a lot of technical people saying, "What on earth is that marketing mumbo jumbo?"
Definitely.
And I think that enterprise data marketplace, or maybe just data marketplace, it will be the same thing. I mean, you mentioned data catalogs in the beginning of our talk here regarding data mesh. I mean, data catalogs are an obvious tool to use in a data mesh, but at the same time, a data catalog wasn't conceived to serve a data mesh, right? So it has certain capabilities, but it also lacks certain stuff, right? It's not the ideal experience plane for a data mesh. That is still to be defined. That's what we're working on with the marketplace, right? But anyways, thank you.
Just one sentence coming back to the catalog. I have the impression that the catalog is you know, just presenting one side, so presenting a catalog that is searchable, browsable, whatever, but it lacks the other side. As you obviously described, a marketplace is something where transactions happen. Mm-hmm. And for a transaction, you always need both sides. Yeah. Meaning, this is why I believe that it's the better vision for the future of something that could be of big help in decentralized data setups.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Thank you. And coming thank you a lot. And coming back to the product owner for search, right? I think that I moved quite far away from my studies 20 years ago, but I have a background in library information science. And even though I moved far away from that field, I studied it for a long time. I have a PhD in that field, and I wrote articles and taught and read, obviously, an enormous amount of literature. And I've taken that with me, getting deeper and deeper into technology. And what you describe with the product owner for search is something that is well established in another domain in library information science, not for data, not for data management, not for tech, but for like searching for information and knowledge using database, like bibliographic database, stuff like that, just searching for knowledge and like the study of information behaviors, what people do, how they ask questions, why they are reluctant to expose their lack of knowledge, and what that means when you're searching for stuff. All that is studied very much in depth, and I think the data community could learn a lot from that. That's how I approach the data community with this intellectual heritage that got somewhat dated, but is very relevant in a new context. If you manage to reposition yourself as a lot of people did in that field into tech, then it has a lot to say, right? And I think PO is something that it will emerge. I'm sure that you're onto something here, Manuel. I'm sure it will emerge. A lot of people are talking about it. So it's just a question of time and how you phrase that, right?
Thanks for this example. Also, with mentioning this bibliothèque or comparing it to a book library, this just reminded me of something in the history, like 20 years ago. I often went to the library to get some books, of course. Back then I was still, going to school or university, obviously. And I think I was 13 years old when I went to the library. And as usual in every library, you have someone who is helping you out if you cannot find. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the lady and asked, can you help me? I want to learn programming. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay. It was the library of the Technical University in Vienna, and she was like, okay, you look pretty young, so it doesn't make sense to look on that side. Let's go to this side. And we went to the other side, and there was a book like Programming for Dummies, the yellow black books.
Yeah, the Wiley books, yeah.
Yes, and she took this one. It was really 20 years ago, or even more, 20 years ago. She took this one. And then she asked me if I have any programming language in mind. I was like, no, I'm completely new. I just got a computer half a year ago. I have no clue at all. And she was like, okay, then I will take another book. You should read this as well.
Yeah.
And I went home with two books, but it was not like, going to the library and knowing exactly, okay, I need Java in 21 days or learn PHP or HTML. I just came and described it was not a problem. I just described my position, my current state of information. That's the current state of information I have. I just want to learn programming. And she was like, "Who? This guy even doesn't know what Java is and PHP. So how should we start?" But somehow she was able to give me the good books. And after 1 month, I went back to the library and started with the next book, which was then learning Java and then a little bit of HTML and CSS. So I think that's a really good comparison. If you compare it to a book library, there is also someone there was usually someone, I don't know how nowadays book libraries work, but
I don't follow it
but
that much.
20 years ago, there was always a lady or a man who was really like literally knowing where to lead you or guide you to the correct information.
And I think technologies where you search and try to explore data, information, and knowledge, they will have those kind of people. It's a matter of time. I mean, if you wanna create value, these technologies, mm-hmm. of course, the technology itself plays an enormous role. I mean, the huge difference a knowledge graph does in our tech category and for other tech categories, other technologies. It's very, very important, the technological dimension. But then there is also this management dimension that is a little absent in many engineers' horizon, right? Engineers are not that used to thinking of these kind of things. So anyway, I think we will see more regarding the product owner for search. Time is up, Manuel. So I wanna thank you for joining the Data Democracy. It was really a pleasure having you on. Let's stay in touch. Where can people reach you?
I think it's the easiest to reach out to me through LinkedIn or via mail. But I'm usually on a daily basis, I at least log in once to LinkedIn to check for new messages and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm. Great. So thank you, Manuel, for joining the show.
Thank you as well, Ole. It was really a pleasure to talk on the show, and see you soon, hopefully.